Welcome to CoCurious, where sacred learning and financial traditions come to be reinvented so that wisdom and money don't compete. My name is David McLean, and we're powered by learningadvisory.com. I grew up in KwaZulu-Natal in the 70s and 80s, and surf culture was a ubiquitous part of our lives and our lifestyles. And Sean Thompson was a hero to all of us. Sean, my curiosity is getting the better of me. Do you surf still? And if so, how often?
I definitely surf. I still love to get out there. But I don't surf as often as I used to. And also the area that I now live in, where I've lived for the last 30 years, Santa Barbara, the surf is very seasonal here. And it's seasonal because our stretch of coastline faces south. And also we have a little chain of islands directly south of us called the Channel Islands chain. And they protect any south-facing swell, which in the United States, in summertime you get south-facing swells, in wintertime you get west and northwesterly swells. So during summertime, there's very little surf around. For 6 months, it's a bit of a dry spell. So I don't surf a lot in summertime. Wintertime, I surf a lot more. You know, there was that great movie that was made called The Endless Summer, which is kind of the antithesis of what surfers think about, because it's the endless winter. That's when surfers get their best waves. Many years ago, I wrote this little card. It was called Surfer's Code. I wrote down the 12 fundamental lessons surfing had taught me about life, every line beginning with "I will." It's kind of a way for me to connect and commit to this lifestyle that I've chosen. And one of the lines is, "I'll catch a wave every day, even in my mind." So some days when I don't go surfing and I'm stuck here behind the computer, for that brief minute, I can close my eyes. I can go and ride a wave at Jeffreys Bay in South Africa, or I can ride a wave at Sunset Beach in Hawaii. And it certainly gets me as invigorated and stoked as if I really did it.
My hobby is mountain biking. And I remember many years ago reading in a magazine, the state of the art was riding single track to work. And I loved that. And when you were talking now about "I will have a surf every day, even if it's virtually," reminded me of that. It's not always possible, but you can still do it and hold that intention and that enthusiasm. You spoke about the seasonality of the Californian waves. And many years ago, it was early autumn, and a group of us set off early one morning for a mountain bike ride, and it was really cold. It was gray. It was overcast. The cloud was low. And one of the gang said, "Oh, the weather's really crap today." And another member of the group, without missing a beat, said, "At least there's weather." And I loved that, because it was just a complete reset of this good, bad thing. You know, sunny days is good. Anyway, the real reason I reached out to you was part of the work that I do is around loss. And this is a beautiful line on your website. It says, "While the words of others inspire us, our own words have the power to transform us." And in my invitation to you, I quoted you to you, and I framed it in the context of life after loss, including life and loss. What was the greatest unlearning that you had when your son passed away nearly 25 years ago?
You know, it's not even something that you can imagine. So you never ever think about it. You never ever prepare yourself for it. I mean, I had some loss when I lost my dear dad in 1981, when I was traveling and competing on the pro tour. I was 24 years old. That was the first profound life change I ever had, in which in a moment, your life before the loss and your life after the loss, it's different. So I suppose it's not an unlearning, but it's a learning, is that you really are on your own. And even though my wife and I were together, you know, you have to deal with it by yourself. That pain, that suffering, that decision of whether you're going to fall into that abyss of would've, should've, could've. It's your own decision. And for me, it was like I couldn't live in that world of what if. What if I'd done that? What if I hadn't done that? What if my son had done this? What if my son hadn't done that? You know, you have to live in the world of what is. And that moment and that decision to accept the reality, the terrible reality of the situation, it's maybe the hardest thing that, whether it's a mom or dad or a son or daughter, has to accept in that terrible time of loss. Because it's a process, you know, it's not like, you know, people come up to you and, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I lost my dog, you know, I understand what you're feeling. Or the only people that understand what you're feeling are the people who have experienced that terrible loss. And losing a child's not like losing a mom or dad. Yes, that all of that is terrible. You know, but when you lose a child, it's devastating. So for me, it was like accepting the finality of that decision. And then maintaining hope. You know, I was not lucky, but hope had been a part of my existence because surfers' lives are built around hope. You know, we hope we're going to get that next wave. We wake up early in the morning, we get out the beach, and we don't really know it's going to be good, but we go anyway because we're looking for that next wave. We're looking for that feeling of stoke. We're looking for that feeling of excitement, exhilaration. We're looking for that connectivity with nature. You know, so I did have that hope there. But, you know, words, you know, you mentioned, you know, what I said, you know, the words of great leaders can inspire us, and our own words are the words that can transform us. And, you know, words are really are powerful. And yes, the words of my son, you know, he'd written this beautiful piece, this essay, and he read it to me over the phone 2 hours before he died. And one of the sentences in that he wrote about tube riding, which is what I was very famous for in surfing, you know, how to actually ride inside the tube in a different way than had ever been done before. It's just the greatest moment in surfing when you're riding inside the spinning tunnel of water. You feel when you're surfing at your very best in that state of flow, when you're riding on instinct, you know, you really do feel that you can command time and space, that you can curve that wall to your will. And he wrote, "The light shines ahead," because you're riding inside the spinning tunnel of water and the wave is sort of enveloping you. And sometimes it gets darker and darker and darker. And you're just aiming for this light. And yet he wrote those words, "The light shines ahead." And yes, it's a beautiful metaphor. And, you know, I really held on to those words of his, you know, "The light shines ahead." And then this little code that I had written, you know, so many years before. It was 12 lines of commitment, 12 lines of metaphor. And, you know, one of the lines for me that was very, I think, very emotionally resonant and pertinent and powerful to me at that time was, "I will always paddle back out." And, you know, on the surface, it's such a simple line. And, you know, when people think about that line, what is it? It's about perseverance, about resilience, about, you know, taking a big wipe out and paddling back out. But I like to think that underlying that is hope. You know, how are you going to get the next wave? And that mission to paddle back out again. And, you know, that was fundamental, I think, to my healing process. And then also, you know, that line that I told you earlier, "I'll catch a wave every day, even in my mind." And, you know, you said, you know, you were riding down that single track and we've got weather, you know, we're out there in the environment, we're doing it anyway. And that connectivity to nature and that love, that passion for what you do enables you to suffer the darkness, enables you to, you know, paddle back out, paddle back towards that light. So, you know, words have really been fundamental to my healing process. Words, I think, are fundamental to anyone's human transformation that wants to change. And like I say, that, you know, yes, words of others inspire us, but you want to create transformation, write down your future. That's why this code process that started with Surface Code and has helped hundreds of thousands of people, it's so simple. David, I really want to create a movement around this because it's so helpful, it's so inspiring, it's so motivating, it's so connecting. and in this broken, troubled, disrupted, volatile world that we live in. You know, writing 12 lines, this is my method, you write 12 lines, every line beginning with "I will," you write your future. It's so empowering, liberating. It's also a cathartic act. You know, when I do these events, I do them with all sorts of organizations. I've done a couple of jails. When an inmate writes, "I will forgive myself," and starts crying in front of his whole group of inmates, and then they all come around and they hug him. Yeah, what has that done? It's a cathartic act. It's a cathartic commitment. Also, it exhibits vulnerability. It connects the vulnerability, brings people together. Like, it's almost like magnetism. And in our broken society, we need as much of a tool for connectivity as we need a tool for transformation and inspiration. You know, we need to bring people together. And in the United States, we're living in a very polarized society. You know, Republicans, Democrats, independents are sort of in this valley of indecision. I like to think that my method, it's free, it's simple, it's powerful. It's a way to bring people together.
The subtext to everything that you've said is words matter.
Words got power. Words matter, and words have got power. It's not the thoughts. The thought is a precursor to action, but words are the way. Words are the path. Words are the fuel. Within the words are the mojo, the fire. But until we write them down, and until we actually commit to them, we're in a state of stasis. It starts with just two words, "I will." It's not "I am" or "I want." It's like "will." It's absolute, you know, fiery commitment. And "I will" is a promise as well. It's, you know, it's a promise you make to yourself. It's this sort of bond of trust and hope. Sometimes I work with the biggest companies in the world, Google, GM, Cisco, Cologix. I mean, I work with hot companies. So what I do is when I start my presentation, I go, text me a word that describes how you're feeling. It might be a group of 30. It might be a group of 100. It might be a group of 1,000. And the whole audience texts me a word and I build an instantaneous word cloud. It's kind of like a macro view of the collective consciousness of that audience. It's like an agglomeration of words that all come across the PowerPoint screen. Everyone can see it instantly. And the more frequent words are larger. And I started doing it during COVID. First client I did it with, it was 1,000 people. It was a company called Gilead Sciences, who at that time were the hottest company on the planet because they had the only treatment. It was a biotech company, had the only treatment for COVID. So all the employees there, they weren't getting fired. They were all like under stress, under pressure, but they were not getting fired because of this amazing economic disruption. And the words were stress, anxiety, depression, disconnection. Yeah, there were some positive words. There was a duality, but essentially it was stress, anxiety, depression, disconnection. I called it a sad mindset. And then I would do four things. I tell a story about the origin and development of the code method, how I developed this. It started with surface code as a way to inspire a group of young people that were coming down to the beach to try to help solve an environmental problem. And then I talk about how I wrote 12 lines and wrote this little card, and then ultimately it led to a series of books. So that's how the code started. Then I tell a story about perseverance and resilience equaling hope, about a big wipeout and getting back on my board. It's a cool surf story, a metaphorical story. Then I tell a story about courage and commitment. I tell a story about riding at the Banzai Pipeline, about paddling over the edge. So now I've told the story about a wipeout. I've told the story about paddling over the edge, about what one has to do in order to be successful. You've got to bust down the door. And then I tell a beautiful story about my son and I on the beach together. Inside, he created this magical time on the beach, called it a sacred story circle, and father and son. It's about being in the present and deep emotional connectivity and turning off the cell phone and throwing it out. So now I've told the origin and development. I've told three stories. Everyone writes their code, 12 lines. Every line begins with "I will." And they write it in 12 minutes, 1 minute per line. Okay. So now they've all written their code. And then I ask people, okay, you know, I was a pro surfer. I was an entrepreneur, developed the code method. So in later life, went back to university, did a Master of Science in Leadership. I studied influence and inspiration. I did the hard yards for 2 years, studying all the latest data on emotional contagion, on the different theories of human transformation and development. I asked people, as I've observed it, I have seen what the meaning and purpose of life is. It's not my interpretation's observation, because I've read tens of thousands of lines of code about what people really want to commit to in their lives. Meaning and purpose of life can be defined by two lines of code. Number one, I will be better. All of us have a human genetic compulsion to be better. We don't sit on our asses. We want to be better. We want to do stuff. We want to connect with our family. We want to be kinder. You know, we want to be successful in business. We want to be successful in life. We want to be happy. You know, we've got a mission. We want to be better today. We want to be better today than we were yesterday. Send me a line about being better. Okay. So the lines come across, beautiful lines, come across my PowerPoint screen. They text it to me. I'll be kinder. I'll spend more time with my son. I will do what I say I'll do. I'll live a life of moral integrity. I mean, people write amazing words. So now, you know, people have written the best version of themselves and a commitment. So now you've got all these lines coming across. So it creates this connectivity, but it also creates this accountability. Okay. But that's just one half of it. I'll be better. So I go, okay, as I've observed, the other half is I will help others be better. We're not just on a mission to be better. We want to help others be better too, be part of humanity. You know, the lines come across, I will volunteer. I'll be a mentor. I'll be a teacher. I'll be the light in the dark. It's unbelievable, David. I tell you what, sometimes the audience is crying. Sometimes I'm crying. It's unbelievable to see the best of humanity and to see people realize that while we're all different, man, we're the same. It doesn't matter who you vote for. We're the same. We're bound by this commitment to be better and help others be better. So these amazing lines come across the screen. It's incredible. Incredible. It's like, before I start my presentation, I said, today, all of you are going to create magic. You're going to be blown away by the creative, committed outpouring that you're going to create. It's going to be magical. So now, I go, you know, thanks. You know, really appreciate it. You got your code. You've got to keep your code with you. I said, you can share it, you know, tell them, I give them a little QR code. They can share the code with maybe their team at work or maybe they coach a sports team. I said, ideally, you do it with your family. But when you do it with your family, you all write your codes together 12 minutes and then you stand up and you read it to one another and then you put it up on the fridge. It's amazing with the family. So now the whole point of this is we've started at stress, anxiety, depression, disconnection, sad mindset. They've heard my four stories. They've written their code. They've shared their code. Okay. Text me a word you're taking home with you and I form a word cloud. You know what the two words are? Hope and purpose. That's how quickly you can change your mindset from stress, anxiety, depression, disconnection to hope and purpose. Last night, I was just looking through, you know, some of the past data, and I capture all that data. Anonymously, I capture it. There's an identifier. Everyone has a unique identifying code that the software creates. So while I don't know who it is, I can identify someone that's gone, like last night, I was looking from overwhelmed. First word is overwhelmed. Last word is hope. It's wonderful. I've just given the method. And the process, people have put their own words in there. That's why I say, words of great leaders inspire us, but our own words are the words that can make a change. You know, this process and the heartbreak and despair that I endured all helped to create this simple little method. And now every time I do this process, and I do it a lot, with company, large organizations, schools, universities, prisons, rehab clinics. And I tell the story of my son and I. It brings me back to him. And it brings me back to his life. And okay, my son was on this life for 15 and a half years. But those words that he wrote, the light shines ahead and the relationship that we had and the beautiful moment we had on the beach. Now, hundreds of thousands of people know this story. And I like to think that it's helped them too in their journey, and it's helped them too in their times of heartbreak. And when they write their words, I like to say that code is forever. That code represents timelessness. It's not like a smart goal. The code is forever. When you write your lines, they're your lines. They're forever. Like, I carry mine with me. You know, there it is. I carry it on my, like, beaten up wallet. And those are my words, you know. Things go sideways in our lives. We get beaten down. You know, we fail. I look at my words. My words give me hope. My words give me power. Words are power.
I'm feeling so many things. I'm feeling such deep gratitude. I'm feeling very moved. And I'm feeling motivated.
You said this word, gratitude. I want to read you something here. So there's a school here. I love to work with schools. I have a program. It's called Double Shaka. So every time I do a paid event, as a form of gratitude, like you say, I do a pro bono event for school, university, you know, whatever. People phone me up, oh, can you come and speak at my school? Whatever. There's a school now. Now my son goes to the same school. I did a program for the students there. And I said, I want all of you to write a gratitude letter. This is a 13-year-old student. So first she writes her code, okay, her 12-line code. I'll better myself every day in ways I may not know yet. I will be who I want to be. I will not hide the worst parts of myself, but embrace and learn from them. I will help others who aren't getting the same opportunities as me. This is a 13-year-old. I will bring awareness to what I think is wrong. I will never alter my opinions to what society wants them to be. I will hear my own pain. I will be grateful in every way. I will love anyone and everyone always. I will remember I can and am loved. Each of these lines is a story. I will be determined to reach my goals, but not be frustrated or angry when I fall a little short, but get back up and do it again. Incredibly profound. So now listen to this gratitude letter. You spoke about those words, your words, gratitude. I personally have had a hard time making room for myself and making sure I'm doing all right. When I first started writing these out, I thought my goals would be simple, such as get good grades or be successful in life. But I realized when I started writing them that I didn't want them to be like that. Rather, I wanted them to give more back to me. Your talk helped me look deeper into my own needs and struggles and how I could best help myself right now, especially since I haven't been that stable mentally recently. Thank you for the advice and your story, but also thank you for helping me realize I wasn't completely okay. And it's a right to take care of yourself for a little bit instead of just looking after everyone else. It's been too long since I've been able to love myself, and unknowingly, you gave me the push to go look for that love again. So thank you. Even if this wasn't exactly what you hoped to achieve through this talk, thank you. Because since then, I've started getting the help I need. And I know it won't be easy, but I will love myself again. And I will wake up tomorrow better than I am now. And I will continue to do so until I find myself again. So thank you for the hope you have shared with me. How about that, David? Gratitude, hope. Words matter. Words have got unbelievable power. And our own words got the most power.